Okay, next up is 3M. Very pleased to have CEO Inge Thulin and from Investor Relations, Matt Ginter. Inge, I must say that over the last couple of years, this story has, from not only an operational but certainly a stock perspective, this story has absolutely been one of the best, and I wouldn't call it a turnaround story, but a real reinvigoration of a stock story. And congratulations and kudos to you for being at the helm for that turnaround and obviously playing a significant role. So with that, Inge's going to go through a couple of slides, and then we'll do some Q&A. So, Inge,
Okay. Take
it away.
Well, thank you, Steve, and good morning, everyone. And also would like to thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure for me and for Matt to be here this morning, so thank you very much. I thought I will do, before we go into more of a dialogue, just to give a little bit of overview of 3M and what we have done during the last couple of years and where we stand and what our plans are for the future, so we're all on the same page as we move ahead here this morning. So first of all, we've laid out the playbook that we are now following, which is based on basically a new vision that was laid out back in 2012, and we complement that, of course, with six strategies that I will talk about in a second. We also clarified our business conduct, which is an important element when you do business all over the world, and I call that as our priority number one. And then we laid out new leadership behaviors that we took a step up versus we have had something we call leadership attribute for many years. And personally, I believe that leadership is about behavior. So we type of rephrased it and made a big step up relative to that. We also laid out three key levers that are creating values for the enterprise today and in the future, and they are portfolio management, investing in innovation, and business transformation. Portfolio management, as you know, is an ongoing process where we constantly challenge our portfolio to make sure we are investing in the right opportunities. Research and development is the heartbeat of 3M, so it's important for us to continue to invest in innovation. And then business transformation is about efficiency and productivity in the organization, which is a big and important element for us. As we laid out the vision 3 years ago, it was important to clarify the purpose of 3M and what we do and what we have done for over 100 years in terms of advancing, enhancing, and improving, and how we do it, which is through technologies, product, and innovation. And when you think about the breadth and the depth of our operation, we can, in fact, as a vision, do it for every company, in every home, and for every life. And every life for us is schools, healthcare, but it's also community and sustainability. So it's a vision that is very holistic and resonates very well with us, and that we can stand behind as we move ahead. And that was an important element. We then put in place six enablers, which are the six strategies. And if you look upon them, the four first of them are all around growth. The fifth one is around people, and the last one is around operational excellence. They articulate very specifically, and I just would like to give two comments on it. When you look upon the first strategy, it starting with expanding relevance to our customers. It was a very important element when we laid out the new plan to make sure it is about relevance to customers as we build the organization and the capabilities. And the second one is in the third strategy, which is the only strategy that starts with a statement, invest in innovation. And as I said earlier, research and development is the heartbeat of 3M, and it's an important element for us to invest in innovation and make sure that we are not becoming commoditized, and rather than be able to drive value for our customers. We laid out, established our financial goals in November 8, 2012, and you can see here we talked about 9 to 11 EPS growth, 4 to 6% organic revenue growth, around 20% plus return on investment capital, and 100% free cash conversion. So aggressive, but still very realistic as we laid them out already back then. When you look upon the results of last year, you can see that the total enterprise came in on organic growth of 4.9% and margins of 22.4% operating income. And you can see the five business groups the size of them, the growth rate, and the margins. And you can see most businesses are more or less at the average of the company, except for healthcare that is running 30% plus relative to margins, and in fact is also the fastest growing business for us. So very solid businesses, all doing very well, and are part of interdependent strategies that are rolled out in the company in a vertical business model. Now the question, of course, for us was also to say, how come that we constantly are able to maintain very good margin and, in fact, expand them, and what is the fundamentals of 3M? And the four fundamental things are, first of all, technology, as I said, around our technology platforms. It's around our manufacturing capabilities around the world. It's our global capabilities where we own subsidiaries all over the world, meaning that we are the first entry into every country in the world, so we don't need to prioritize with anyone else. We decide what to do. And then it's the 3M brand, which is the equity. So the four of them are important, and I will comment on them in a second relative to another element in terms of the fundamental strengths of 3M. Just a short comment on the three key levers and start with portfolio management. Very important for us to make sure that we reallocate resources to the biggest opportunity and that we also, in fact, make sure that we understand what different divisions stand in our portfolio relative to potential investment, either organically or through merger and acquisitions. We went through all the portfolio here 2.5 years ago and identify the businesses basically in a couple of categories. One is what we call heartland, one we call push forward, and then we had something we call strategic review, which was businesses at the time that had underperformed versus 3M average result for the last 5 years. The heartland division is one-third of the company's five divisions, also accretive to the margins. The push forward are businesses that are growing very fast in markets that are growing even faster than the average on 3M. And then we have strategic review, as I explained at the time. Strategic review, when we started, was around $2.5 billion, and today that is less than $500 million in that category. And it's not one business or one division. It's a smaller cluster of businesses in many divisions that we have that we're now working on. Now, the important thing that we looked upon for the future is, first of all, relative to M&As. And as you've probably seen, we said that we will spend $5 to $10 billion in the five-year plan. We have a very clear plan now in terms of portfolio intent relative to where is the opportunities for us to invest. Number two, as we know the four fundamental strengths for us, everything we look upon, we need through those four things, at least in 2.5, maybe three of the levers to be able to create value for 3M's or shareholders very fast. And of course, we have to make sure that we maximize value as we go and should over time be accretive to our operation as we move ahead. So I think in terms of even if organic local currency growth, our prime strategy, it could from time to time be complemented with acquisitions. And here in the last 10 days, we have made two acquisitions that you maybe have seen. One is a bigger one of around $1 billion that is in the separation media business, basically going and building out a platform relative to filtration, which will enhance our core filtration business and utilize 16 or 46 technology platforms. And the other one was a smaller one where we basically build out around a technology that is going into vascular access, where we have a very, very strong position, very much with a brand with the name Tegaderm. So this is a smaller one that we will be able to expand all over the world. So two very good acquisitions that was announced in the last 10 days that will add value to 3M. A round of innovation, as I said, is the heartbeat of the company. And we have 46 technology platforms that is owned by the company. Important point, owned by the company. It's not owned by one division or one country. Everyone have access to the 46 technology platform, can be used for you internally in 3M and externally with customers. So it's an open innovation, both internally and externally. Very, very powerful in terms of being able to combine them and find solution for the customers. We decided back in 2012 to step up our investment relative to research and development, and we had had an average investment around 5.5 to 5.6% over years, and we decided to step that up to 6% as we move ahead. All of those investments should go versus disruptive technologies and disruptive markets, which is important for us as we build a business for the future. So a little bit longer project, a little bit more risky, but that is where you need to go if you're a company like 3M for the future. And then finally, the efficiency relative to business transformation with an ERP deployment, that will increase our capabilities to serve customers at the same time becoming more efficient inside of 3M. We have now started implementation in multiple countries, and one of the things we're doing now is actually to build it out as a first step specifically in Europe and make sure that we deploy that very effectively there. And we have already started with 4 supply chain and logistics centers in Europe. You can see the total project here is investment of $1.1 to $1.2 billion over the five-year period. And you can see the benefits by 2020 in terms of operational savings is estimated to $500 million to $700 million. And then you can see there is a $500 million relative to structural working capital improvements also by 2020. So very important for us, and also why we start in West Europe is the capability there, and also one of the areas where we have the lowest margin in the company, so the efficiency model there will work very, very well for us. In terms of our return to shareholders, you can see here that 2015, we estimated this point in time a dividend of $2.6 billion, which would be an all-time record. You can see also that we have had 57 consecutive years of annual increases, and we have paid dividends without interruption for 98 years. And as you look upon the baseline, is the future increases to grow in line with earnings over time. In terms of our repurchases, you can see that 2013 we had a repurchase of $5.2 billion, and 2014 of $5.7 billion. You can also see here as we move ahead, just now we have in the plan of $20 to $22 billion as we laid out the plan. So 2014 was a solid year for us. You can see here that on the EPS growth, we came in at 11.5%, organic growth at 4.9%, so right in the middle. The free cash flow conversion was 104%, and return of invested capital was 22%. So a very important thing for us at the same time as we added more capacity and made some expansion both in R&D and acquisition and capital expenditure. So I think it's important then to end on this slide to say that we returned $7.9 billion to shareholders via dividends and gross share repurchases. And for this year, you can see we have a gap of 8 to 8.30, so there's no change versus prior communication. You can see there's a little bit of further foreign currency headwinds for us versus when we roll out the plan. And you can also see a little bit of retirement benefit that have increased versus when we communicate back in November. Sales growth for the year, we think about 3 to 6%. And you can see the foreign currency translation is expected with a headwind to 4 to 5%, tax rate 28 to 29, and still the free cash flow conversion of 90 to 100%. So by that, I hold it there, and then I think I'm sitting down, and then we open up for some discussion here.
Yep, great. So maybe if you could just start by taking a little bit of walk around the world. There's a lot of, there is many cross currents that are going on macro-wise globally. Maybe you could just talk about what you guys are seeing out there so far this year on the macro scene.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, first of all, we are early into the year, and as we said, we are looking for organic local currency growth of 3 to 6% for the year. And we still stand behind that figure. So we have not seen any changes this early in the year relative to the changes there. I would say that United States, we laid out that of 3 to 6% for the year. It looks still that it's going well in U.S. We ended Q4 with 7% organic local currency growth in U.S. I don't think that's something that we will see quarter by quarter, But I think the 3-6 is still realistic, even if the growth is moderating a little bit. But it looked very solid in the United States. West Europe, we have said for the year -2 to +2. Last year we said flat to +3, and we came in around 2. So we see a little bit more of a challenge maybe this year in West Europe. Now, I personally have been more optimistic than most relative to West Europe in the past, very much because I try to separate the local domestic opportunity versus the geopolitical and the technical capabilities long term. And it look now that many are talking about that there is event, they see eventually a little bit of uptick in West Europe. So when we say flat to -2 to +2, I think that's still relevant. And maybe there is a little bit of upside there. But let's see. I came just back from Europe on Sunday evening. And to be honest, up to this point in time, I didn't see any evidence of anything ticking up, right? So it's too early, I think.
I guess a question on Europe, and I think you're very knowledgeable on this situation, given you were, you know, you ran international for a long period of time. You know, everybody talks about the weakening of the currency and, you know, the export potential, but obviously a decent amount of the exports were going to emerging markets historically.
Yeah.
So there's a, you know, where are they going to export to?
yeah, I think
that, I mean, are they coming to the U.S. or, you know, are
I
they...
I think some of it come, you know, in West Europe, when you look upon that economy, a big portion of the growth engine from an export perspective, actually automotive. So I think if the automotive is an indication of that export will expand, I think that's where it will come. And then I think it can go many, many places, right? So I think that is where we come. Now, that's all giving you an excellent point relative to specifically South Central East Europe and Middle East Africa, because a lot of export is going that way. And I would say that part of the world, even if that's smaller for us, I would say, of course, it has slowed a little bit, right? And if you think about it, it's like $1.5 billion for us if we combine them in sales revenue. And still places like Poland, places like Turkey is doing well. Russia is going sideways as we speak, right? So I think that part of the world, I will still be cautious relative to opportunities. Latin America, we said, first of all, Latin America for us is a sizable business. It's the most developed of developing economies, and we are very pleased with the portfolio mix in Latin America. It's as good as in the United States, meaning our five business groups are very well balanced, and both in terms of revenue and in terms of profitability. We have said 5 to 9% growth for the year in Latin America, and that's realistic. Even if a couple of smaller countries have challenges last year and still have a little bit of challenges, as we know, it's Argentina and Venezuela, all other countries are doing very well. And the two big ones is Mexico, doing extremely well, and Brazil, I would say, for the last 12 months has been more flat to gone sideways, but and still are there. But I personally believe that we will see an uptick in the end of this year for Brazil. So Latin America 5 to 9 is realistic.
What is, I mean, the cross currents in Brazil, I get Mexico, but why isn't every you know, high-level macro data point you read on Brazil is, you know, pretty negative? Autos and trucks and... What's organically going on there?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think, first of all, they had an election last year, and the outcome of that for most people, maybe not for all, but most people, was a type of surprise. So basically, they continue more of the same. But I think that reforms are taking place because they have no choice. It is a very domestic-driven market. So in order for you to be successful in Brazil, you need to have a footprint in Brazil that is not only, I would say, a sales and distribution arm. You need to be there with research and development. You need to be there with manufacturing. And we have been in Brazil since 1946. So we are sizable in Brazil, and we know how to capitalize on it. So the reforms will come. They will stimulate the economy as you go, and then at least for 3M, we're in a good position to capitalize on that. So I would say, you know, every time you look upon Latin America and you look upon over time, the encouraging thing is the ratio. It's going like this in terms of growth. Now on the way, there's a little bit bump.
Right.
And you have just to be careful if you would like to be a long-term global growth company. You need to hang in even when it becomes a little bit volatile.
Right.
You adjust your organization and so forth, but you don't go home, right? You stay and you make sure that you have the fundamentals in place. Relative to APAC, we said 3 to 8% for the year. Japan did well for us last year, and in fact, we also made an acquisition there. We bought Sumitomo, the remaining 25% of that operation. And so they did relatively well last year, and they continue to do well. And China, I'm more encouraged around China for the 3M's operation in there. And I will make the comment to why. We are sizable in China. We've been in China since, with a wholly owned subsidiary since 1984. We have around 10 manufacturing sites in there. We have a totally vertical integrated model with research and development, manufacturing, and commercialization capabilities. As that economy slowed a couple of years back, right, when we were talking about GDP growth of 9 to 10, people started to talk about 5 to 6. One thing that happened was the mindset, I would say, in China was very much around growth, growth, growth. We needed to change that, right? We needed to change it in order to say, well, it's now about almost a Western model. You have to have efficient growth. You need to drive productivity. And we actually put in a leader for China that has been the managing director of 3M Canada and turned that around, and then was the managing director of 3M UK and turned that around. And been in there now for 18 months, and I'm very encouraged of what I'm seeing, because it's both activities around efficiency in the model and growth is coming up to a higher level. So I hope that we can talk more to you guys about China in the next 6, 9, 12 months. But it's for me that the growth rate of the second biggest economy in Europe, only in the world, only be 6%, I don't care. This 6% is fantastic, and it's just to make sure that you capitalize on it and have your plan in place. And then I would say longer term also for APAC is very important to be in Southeast Asia. And we make quite some investment in Southeast Asia. Southeast Asia represents two things in terms of opportunities. One is the domestic market. The other one is that Southeast Asia, in a way, they're a type of supplier, and we become even more so both to China and to Japan over time. So they are almost like Poland was many years back, in between West Europe and Central East Europe, type of centralized place with a local domestic market that is relatively robust, but more importantly, able to provide both logistics and manufacturing to the rest of the world. So I think that's we stick to 3 to 6, and that's not much change. We're too early in the year to see any big changes here, right?
But, are there any within kind of the first half, second half? You said Latin America, Brazil should pick up by the second half of the year. I mean, does that mean that the first half in Latin America, are there any of these regions where the first half is maybe at the low end, the second half at the high end, or vice versa? And any significant
First of all, I like the way you talk about first and second half, because as we all know, a quarter is a quarter, right? So you have to look upon sustainability in your expansion in the market, right? So I think it's that's an important element. I would say that if there is something that should eventually pick up a little bit more in the end of the year, could be Latin America, and it could also be West Europe, right? So I think it's if the thesis of more growth should come with the currency adjustment, it should be in West Europe, right? So if there's two that I would buy into this, which I like a lot, I like the way you talk about first and second half, that's maybe where it would come. Now, We don't know then what will happen with U.S. in the second part of the year, right? So, it's an interesting way.
I wish we only had, you know, two earning seasons a year as well, but these guys, you know, care about quarterly reporting. Not my fault.
No. At least you and I are on the same page.
Just very quickly on a couple of the end markets, then we'll get to kind of bigger picture strategy stuff.
Yeah.
Actually, any questions on the global macro from the audience right up here?
Just a comment on oil and the decline, massive decline, and how that's affecting you.
Yeah, a little bit, but not some. For us, it would be around raw material. For us, if you think about it, like we spend $8 billion in raw material purchases, and $1.5 billion of that, so 20% as a correlation to oil, right? So that's type of, if you think about it like that. When we started the year, we had we talked about eventually a benefit from oil from 100 to 250 million, and I think as we stand today, it's probably on the higher end of that.
Just digging a little bit into end markets, you know, I think a bit of the end market Achilles heel for you guys, swing factor, has been electronics.
Yeah.
What's going on in that business today, and then how do you think about that, you know, longer term as a part of 3M? It just is probably the most volatile, tougher to predict businesses that you guys compete in.
Yeah. Well, if we go back to first of all, what we have done the last 3 years, we went from six sectors, if you like, to five business groups, and we have gone from 40 divisions to 27. So we have realigned a lot in the organization in order to do two things. One, to be more relevant to the customers, and also to be more effective and efficient in the organization. So, you know, in my book and in all books, is complexity is the biggest enemy of productivity. So it was important to really streamline the organization. It actually started with electronic and energy. We had at that time eight divisions in that business. It became over time reduced to four, and we did some streamlining. Everything with the objective to become more relevant to the customers. Now, one thing that I've and if you look upon the margin for that business is they ended last year 19.9% operating income, and we moved that from 15.7 or something. So we moved it over time. Why I'm encouraged about it is that improvement did not come due to incredible big volumes that came through, right? So the structure is very good at this point in time relative to take on eventually more volume. But also if we grow like 5, 6% or 4, 5, the structure is very well in place in order to serve that market. We are absolutely 100% committed to that market because in electronics and consumer electronics, that's driven by two things. It's driven by technology conversion. We know how to do that. That is, our investment in research and development is right down that alley. So we know how to do that. And secondly, it's cost out. So as soon as your design or spec in, it's cost out. That's what 3M is all about. We are about technologies. We are about innovation. We are about helping other customers in their technology conversion. And as we are science-based, project-based and company, we know how to drive out cost. So it's a very important business for us, and I will be very surprised and even disappointed if we don't do slightly over 20%. If they 19.9 last year, we will do 20-plus this year as we move ahead. So very, very important, and I think the element that was important in the restructuring was that, you know, I personally doing my first 9 months as COO, as you remember, because before I became CEO, I visited a lot of customers, and it became very clear to me that specifically for that business that we were not realigned with the real need of our customers in order to respond fast from a technology perspective back to them. So they had to deal with multiple sectors and many divisions, right? That's not the way you do business there when everything is going so fast in consumer electronics, right? You need to be able to respond fast and so forth. So
it's a good business for us and very committed. It's a, as you said, maybe a little bit more volatile, but not huge today based on the way we were able to balance out our portfolio.
On the margin front, moving from the top line a bit, the your margins, you've consistently said, low 20s, I think 21.5 to 22, or I'm not sure if there's official guidance out there. What is kind of the official guidance on margins? How do we think about where they can go longer term? Is there a breakout at some point? Clearly, the last couple quarters, and this is beyond the raw materials, swing that you've had.
Yeah.
Is there potential for a breakout here?
Yeah. Well, so first of all, let me just talk about the playbook as it started. As you recall, Steve, when I took over, we had at that time an organic local currency growth that was pretty high. In fact, it was maybe unrealistic. No one really understood how we even can come there, et cetera. So the first point was to put in place a target that were realistic, still achievable with a model. And that came down to 4 to 6%. And the objective was to make sure that we could come into that range. So what I said, we need to get back 3M to growth and into 4 to 6. Don't expect margin expansion, because I didn't know at that point in time. But I didn't say it will be that we will lose out on margins. I mean, I said, don't expect margin expansion. Two things. I didn't know exactly what it would take us for the investment for growth. And number two, it was unclear for me the timing in terms of this type of efficiency model. How long time will that take? Now, growth has picked up. Historically, we were growing 1.5x IPI. Lately, we've been growing 1.7x IPI. So growth have ticked up a little bit. So that was encouraging. On the margin side, last year, we had 80 basis point improvement, so almost 100%. So margin expansion came, and I had not talked about, and we are not promising, because we didn't know how long time would that take. As we roll into this year, we said in December, we believe there is now another 50 basis points for this year, and I'm very confident that we will be able to do that. So I think that's why, and I wouldn't talk beyond, it's tough to talk about above first quarter and first half of the year, so I wouldn't talk about 16 and so forth. But in my view, the 50 basis points for this year, feel very good about it, and I, for something, believe that in 3M that we're in a good role here, and we should be able to do more.
Right. So you're at the point where the investments have been made, the growth is starting to bear fruit, so the model changes from, we got to spend to really place our bets and try and get that growth rate to a point.
Yeah.
Now that's up there. You see the model spitting out better incrementals.
I'm very pleased in the way the organization responded to the whole theme around productivity, right? So, my view is, you should take action the whole time relative to your structure, not because you must, but because you can. And it's a big difference, right? When you're forced into that you must do something, it's too late. Someone else is dictating your time. Someone else is telling you this is not good enough. You will make mistakes. 3M is in a different point today. We can constantly challenge ourselves relative to our structure. So the point is, we have our plan. I have challenged all the operational units to be more aggressive than me. I would like them to tell me where they can do more. And my point is, the day I need to tell them is a bad day. Not only for me, but also for them, right? So they are type of working the plan in order for us to be more efficient. So I think that's an important role. It's also coming back to our increase to closer to 6% on R&D. Research and development, they are not excused from productivity. They are not excused. So I see some benefit coming of them also driving more efficiency and productivity in the research and development area. And when you go from 40 to 27 division, what is happening is there's so many programs going on in a company like 3M. And if you're smaller, you still have many programs because you're type of expanding, right? When you becoming part of a bigger entity, suddenly what you thought was big is coming suddenly very small. Doesn't really matter. And that's resources that you now can move to what is really making an impact as you move ahead, right? So I think that whole, is nothing you can put a figure on to the, exactly what is the benefit now this quarter, next quarter, but I think there's evidence in the model that is working and improving.
Have you been able to, you know, you guys have set up shop everywhere around the world. You've, you know, I think you spent a lot of money in the last several years on capital spending. First of all, that capital spending budget, are we at now kind of a run rate as a percentage of sales for what you're going to do on CapEx?
Yeah, we are around 5% or so, right? And if you think about it, it is important element for 3M because we are sophisticated relative to a lot of the production we do in manufacturing, and we outsource very little. And so when you outsource, it's in my view, it's like you may be more commoditized. We are not very commoditized. So for us, the IP and is important from research and development to engineering as well, right? So if you really scrutinize the model and compare us to someone, you can say, well, maybe that should be 3.5% or 4%. Should not be for 3M. So research and development and engineering is one of the unknown strengths of 3M, the way that operation is operating for us. So think about it, like 5%. I think
you're there now, though. It's not going to need to go up. Doesn't need to go down.
Not at this point in time. No, not this. You know, that's, for me, there's a lot of money we put in there.
Sure.
And the day we start to talk about the lower percentage, then I would be really concerned, because then we start to give up on our business model that is very, very effective and creating a lot of value for shareholders.
And have you been able to kind of work your plants and, you know, offset some of the, you know, some of the natural hedges? Has that worked out from a Forex perspective, utilizing low-cost manufacturing a little more in areas, you know, in exporting, or is it pretty status quo?
Yeah, pretty. You know, there's some little. But, you know, I think you have to be very careful to not start to change your model based on FX, right? So the best thing to handle FX is, first of all, new product introductions. Produce as close as possible to the customers. Of course, hedging is an important element, and we hedge 50% of some of our currencies. And previously, we had a 12-month hedging, and like 6 months ago, we expanded that to 24 months,
okay.
Right? So we're on 24 months, and so I think those are more important things. Now you can, of course, opportunistically move some respirator production from one piece to the other. But I think it's important to think about your strategy is more like a marathon. It's not a sprint, right? So the sprint is very opportunistic. You move back and forth. So you have to be calm in situation like this and just make sure you stay to your strategy. And if there's something else that is changing, in my mind, that should be a fundamental change on the customer structure in some part of the world if you should move something from one part to the other. So not to run into to be a trader on currency, right? You do that on new products and those type of things.
We've got a question back here. We'll open a couple minutes for Q&A here.
Hi. So you say you hedge roughly 50% of your currencies.
Yeah.
Could you elaborate on what are the factors that go into those that you would hedge and those that you would not hedge?
Yeah, Matt Ginter will make that comment. So,
so we separate the currencies into a couple of different buckets. One would be the actively managed ones, the ones for which there's a good, solid, liquid market available, most of the majors. And that's the bucket that we manage with forward hedges, anywhere from 12 to 24 months. Other currencies that are less liquid, we typically manage those more through a combination of local management action, so obviously managing your cash balances very carefully, raising prices in situations where you may have devals where appropriate to raise price to offset that impact, or just obviously managing your local cost structure very carefully when you're in periods of devaluation. So we separate things into those two categories and manage accordingly, and obviously the local teams get a lot of support from our central treasury team, who are charged with, you know, obviously managing the entire risk bucket, if you will, of FX.
Any other questions back here?
Thanks. Just two questions. First, you noted the multiple of growth to IP has moved up from 1.5 to 1.7 recently. Could you just maybe talk about some of the factors driving that, if it's better pricing power or segments or volumes, and what is the right sustainable level? And secondly, can you just speak to the margins? It seems there's some opportunity on the electronics front. Where are the sources of opportunities for the greatest margin expansion, and are there specific segments or areas that are over-earning that needs to normalize? Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I think that first of all, 1.5x was the historical capability, and that was also how we build the plan. So when we talked about 4 to 6, was actually built on that capability and then based on external factor relative to the growth in the next 5 years. Now, as that has moved up, I think there is a key driver is the United States, and there is two things that have happened in the United States. One is out of our control, if you like, but is that the economy improved. But what we control was that back in 2011, we focused the United States organization in a different way relative to our commercialization capabilities. Back at that time, we had an organization in U.S. that was, I would describe it as more global than U.S., meaning you had a lot of function in U.S., where people have global responsibilities. But they had U.S. responsibility, and then they had an international responsibility, added a global role, right? The issue with that, by definition, is that at that time, international did very well. And for most people, including myself, I would run to places where things are going better, meaning we had a lot of emphasis going outside of United States. So we restructured and put in place totally dedicated U.S. execution organization, and we put in place an international organization. So it's basically you took an area that had three responsibilities in one, and you split them out with focus. That started back in 2011 and is now operationalized in all divisions in the United States. That is a key element for the growth we see in terms of execution, in addition to that United States start to grow faster, right? So we maybe have seen a pickup in growth anyhow in U.S. due to the fact the economy became more robust and grew more, but I think also our focus on the organization helped a lot. So I think that's the key element. Relative to margins, I would say it's if there's one... It's not. I will not talk about it like a business group issue, because all business groups are doing very well. If you think about almost as average, with healthcare then sticking up on the high end. And by the way, healthcare is still underpenetrated, if you like, in developing economies. And developing economies, for us, we have a higher margin there. Biggest opportunity for us as we speak in terms of improved margins is West Europe. So West Europe has the lowest margin of any geographical areas for us, which is based on history, and it's also based on history and competitiveness in that market with a lot of different and strong regional competitors from Europe. But that's the biggest opportunity. That is also why we implement the ERP system first in West Europe, and so I would say that what you will see, if there's any margin expansion, it should come from West Europe, and that will benefit all five business groups equally in a way, right? So I will not say it's one group over the other. You know, you will see, and that's okay, all of them a little bit better, and the help should come from West Europe.
Inga, I think that's it. Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate
it. Thank you.